Ramping up your business? The time is near. You've given it heart. Now get it in gear. It's Passage to Profit with Richard and Elizabeth Gearhart.
I'm Richard Gearhart, founder of Gearhart Law, a full-service intellectual property law firm specializing in patents, trademarks, and copyrights.
And I'm Elizabeth Gearhart, founder of Gear Media Studios, podcast and content coach, Passage to Profit co-host, and CMO at Gearhart Law.
That's a big list. Well, welcome to Passage to Profit, the road to entrepreneurship, where we talk with entrepreneurs and celebrities about their business journeys. So today's guest, Jim Beach, is an entrepreneur and author who argues that the real heroes of climate change aren't celebrities or politicians, they're risk-taking capitalists working 80-hour weeks to actually fix the world. He's the author of a new book, Real Environmentalist, and we're really anxious to hear about his thoughts on how capitalists and entrepreneurs are fixing the environmental issues. And he's also an amazing entrepreneur in many other ways. He is the founder of the School for Startups, which teaches entrepreneurs more about business than they could get anywhere else. So welcome to the show, Jim. It's a pleasure to have you. Your new book argues that capitalists and not climate celebrities are the ones saving the planet. Why do you believe entrepreneurs are the true environmentalists today?
Well, thank you for having me. It is an honor, and I'm going to have some fun. I don't think that they are the ones solving it. I know it because I have met the people. So I was doing my radio show, and one of my radio guests was a man named Wayne Elliott. And I consider him an environmental hero twice. He has, for the last 65 years, recycled ships. He buys aircraft carriers and submarines and oil tankers and drives them into his yard. And under the highest ISO certifications and the highest environmental standards, dismantles the ship and recycles them down to their fundamental parts, and 97% of the ship can be recycled. One of the hardest parts is the batteries. And so he spent $20 million of his own money in 20 years researching how to recycle alkaline batteries. He finally figured it out and got a patent and got Canada up to 97% in recycling, and it had an amazing accomplishment. Eventually, that business was sold to BlackRock, so you really don't get any more prestigious or a more corporate blessing than that. But here he is changing two environmental problems and solving them. Ships that sink are much worse than the island, you know, the sea level rising. You know, the sea level rising is going to take centuries to happen, but that ship that sank off of your port could leak asbestos, oil, fuel, paint, and thousands of other chemicals that would ruin your ship or your port or your fisheries for centuries. And I think that's much more likely when we consider that there's hundreds of thousands of ships that are at the end of their life cycle right now, and there's no international law about what happens to them. They get sunk in the middle of the night in the middle of the ocean. I think it's a much bigger problem. But here's Wayne solving two of those problems. And I asked Wayne, can I write a book about you because you deserve to be more famous? And he's like, sure. And then I started studying the problem, and I discovered 216 American companies that are for-profit, 100% operating on our normal capitalist rules, go find a customer, have the customer pay you and deliver a good or service. They're not out there getting grants. They're not, you know, appealing to Congress for congressional money and for, you know, government loans. They're out there selling product and services, and they are slowly cleaning the earth and solving the problems. You tell me an environmental problem, and I can introduce you to the entrepreneur that is currently solving that problem. So in the book, we have five heroes. Wayne is, of course, one. Another one is named Gator Halpern. In one of his college classes, he figured out that the chemistry that they were teaching could have other uses. And now he is growing ocean coral, like, you know, sea coral, 50 times faster than God can grow it. And wow, he can come into your resort overnight and replant a coral reef that was damaged or give you a whole new coral reef. Another incredible scientist that I met is figuring out how to suck all of the microplastics out of the ocean and out of our water and turning those into sneakers and Croc shoes and things like that.
That's really amazing. And getting back to the ships, we live in New Jersey, and if you go down to the shore, you look out across the water, and a lot of places there's these old sunken ships that are sticking out of the water. They're ugly and they're, you know, hazards for other boats. I guess the scuba divers like, you know, swimming around in them, but that's about the only use.
Well, we were at the Patent Awards for New Jersey for the Research and Development Council, and there was an entrepreneur there who was doing the same thing with the microplastics. I don't know if it's the same person, but those are a huge problem. And making plastic is made from oil. I don't know if everybody knows that. And so, I mean, I worked at Dow Chemical, and when the price of oil went up, Dow Chemical's profits went way down because they were making all the plastic. So if the more that you can recover, the less oil you're going to need for those types of consumer products.
Right. One of the entrepreneurs in the book is actually addressing that and figuring out how to build plastics without oil as the backbone chemical that holds all of them together. So instead of having oil as the basis of your paint or your cosmetics or anything like that, a natural element can be used, but he's replacing the bad part out of our plastics, which is an amazing thing. Now, here's the kicker of the story that's going to make you really upset. He is a professor at UC San Diego, and the dean of his program came up to him and said, "You need to stop studying all of this commercial stuff. You're not doing what you're supposed to be doing. Go write papers for us to read. Quit doing this commercial application stuff."
Wow.
He got in trouble for saving the world is the way I think of it.
It's really true. There's a mindset out there, and I'm glad you're challenging it. We're with Jim Beach, who's the author of The Real Environmentalist. Jim, doesn't some of this activity need to be coordinated by the government?
I'm sorry. I don't think so. No, they're the people who are slowing down my entrepreneurs and are making it more difficult and coming in and saying, "Oh, wow, now that we've discovered you here solving things, we need to regulate you." No, I think the last thing that we need is more government involvement in this. The government, the academics, they are the problem. The non-government organizations, the NGOs, they're slowing down and preventing good solutions, and they're spending money in the wrong places. They just had the big Copa Brazil event where they all flew down to Brazil and talked about all the important things that need to be done, the new regulations they want, and how they're going to decrease the usage of air conditioning and all of this stuff. Well, not a single one of my entrepreneurs was invited. Not a single business person was down there representing common sense and saying, "I've already solved this problem. We can do this. You know, we're already doing it, and we don't need you to provide money or more regulations."
But one of the things that I think you point out is that there are a lot of celebrities who are pretty hypocritical on these topics, right?
Well, it goes beyond that. The level of hypocrisy is absolutely disgusting. And so one of the things that we did do in the book is we compiled a list of the 10 biggest celebrity hypocrites. And one of the features we're going to talk about later on in the show is how to use ChatGPT. And I'll talk about this then. But we use ChatGPT to prove who the biggest hypocrites are. It's not our suggestion or our bias or any influence. This one's prettier than that one. No, we set it upon ChatGPT to figure out and tell us who the biggest hypocrites are.
So, wait a minute. We're not going to say who they are on this show. You have to buy the book. What's the name of the book?
Yes.
Well,
I'll tell you some of them. Some of them are obvious. You know, some of them are quite disgusting. I'll tell you some of the people who didn't make the list, and I can tell you why. The Kardashians, for example, all of their houses get fined every month about $100,000 each because they use more water than they are allotted. They want green grass in Calabasas, and that's not going to happen without daily watering. And they use so much more than their allotment that they're fined $100,000 a month. And the list of celebrities who get fined was endless. I have an entire, it's a footnote, and it goes on for a page and a half of other celebrities that are getting fined for their excessive water use. And that didn't even make the list. The Kardashians didn't make the list because they're not stupid enough to go out there and say, "Look how great I am. I'm saving the world. I'm saving the world." Some of our celebrities are famous for going to the UN and giving speeches and saying, "I'm saving the world," and then saying, "You're not doing enough," then getting on their private jet and flying off to their private yacht with some 24-year-old.
What's the name of your book? You didn't say.
It's The Real Environmentalist. It's also realenvironmentalist.com. And you can go there and see the methodology that I'll talk about in a minute or two with ChatGPT, see who's on the list, have us defend it. And then there's also bios on all of our heroes there as well. So let's not forget the hero part too.
Is there a real concern about climate change and the environment? I mean, I've heard so many contradictory opinions on this. What's your opinion?
Well, I got a degree in oceanography in undergraduate. I have sailed across the Atlantic Ocean. I have been on some of the tallest mountains in the world, and I've, explored the world, and I want my kids to do the same thing. I love beautiful, clean environment. And I'm a conservative in the, 1902 Teddy Roosevelt type conservative. Let's just not change stuff. Let's not introduce wolves unless there's a reason to, Let's not mess around with things that are working in that sense of conservation. I used to worry about climate change all of the time because of all of the media stories that we hear, the UN report that we get every 4 years. Of course, I was worried. But the more that I study it, the less I'm worried, and I'm sleeping really well at night right now, guys.
Got it.
My story is an incredibly good news story. The problems are being solved.
I just want to get your take on this. So you know that when you burn a fossil fuel like gasoline, when you combust it, everything in it's made of carbons and hydrogens, and you combust it, you add oxygen to that, and you make CO2, which is the bad greenhouse gas. But you also make a molecule of water, right? So I feel like we're taking water that's been buried with the dinosaurs for however long and throwing it into our atmosphere and really saturating our atmosphere with more water than it expects. And maybe it's adapted to that. But when you think about these storms and tsunamis and all this stuff and rising sea levels and everything, people are like, it's from the icebergs melting, maybe, but maybe it's all this extra water we're throwing into the atmosphere.
That's not the main thing that I'm worried about with water. And I'm also not worried about the atmosphere right now. There's been a lot of studies on that. And I'm going to come down on the not worried side. As a matter of fact, there is a European company that I did not cover in the book because they would not let me interview them that is primarily owned by Bill Gates, interestingly enough. And they are the major carbon offset company in the world. And they will take all of your private airplane use and plant trees and all that stuff. Well, they're not planting trees, they're cleaning the air. They have built skyscrapers that suck air in one side and pump air out the other side that is clean and better. And I don't know anything about it because they really won't talk to me about it. I can, give you the name of the company offline and stuff. But Bill Gates has sworn, and he just made his big announcement about a month ago that he's not worried about the climate anymore, that these companies are doing what they claim in cleaning the air and the environment. So water is a huge issue. I think my biggest concern is the lack of water right now in certain areas that we're building data mines and all of these new data centers that are going to need nuclear power to operate and a whole new source of water to keep cool. So I'm not worried about the atmosphere, Elizabeth.
Well, we're with Jim Beach, who's the author of The Real Environmentalist. And I'm kind of glad to see the direction things are going now with climate change because it seemed for so many years the issue was highly politicized. And the politics of it really interfered with thoughtful, deliberate solutions that both could be arrived at through commercial capitalist means and also through perhaps some regulation, some moderate regulation and policy. And it just became such an intense issue that we couldn't make any progress on it. And regardless of whether you think there's global warming, cleaning up rusty ships out of the ocean is something that everybody can agree on, right? Nobody wants
Should be
to
a
see those.
no-brainer.
So I think that the direction you're taking us with these concepts is great. What do you see as the future of capitalism and environmentalism?
Well, I am concerned about the future of capitalism itself. I think that, with the mayoral elections in both Seattle and in New York, and the way politics are now, there is a huge majority of youngsters that are loving socialism, and they haven't seen it collapse five times during their lifetime like some of us older people have, and so they still think it's sexy. I think capitalism needs to be defended, and one of the coolest ways that we could defend capitalism is show that it saved the environment. So I think that the two maybe shouldn't be as connected as much as they are, but they are 100% connected, and that's what's so cool about the entrepreneurs. Instead of asking for money from the government, from people who don't want to give it because they want to buy more military or more guns, the perpetual fight of guns versus butter, what are we going to buy? We take that problem away and have the entrepreneur go to people who are throwing money at them and saying, solve my problem. You solve my problem, I will gladly give you my money, the way the capitalist system works.
I would say that my early corporate experiences were in the chemical industry. And when the environmentalists came out with their program in the 80s and the 90s, the chemical industry just had this knee-jerk reaction that, you know, defend at all costs and just ignore, you know. And, you know, they knew that they were polluting. They knew that they were polluters. That was a business that runs on very small margins. They didn't want any extra cost. And so they worked hard to discourage the environmental agenda. So it does require incentives for some of these companies to put profits aside and work on things that are going to fix the environment, right? And to me, it seems that part of that has to be through some level of government policy.
I don't know. I lost you somewhere in there. I don't necessarily agree with that. And I'm not going to compare a new entrepreneurial startup with a 50-year-old company that makes military weapons and chemical weapons and breast implants and the incredible Teflon that keeps my eggs off of my plate in the morning. You know, I'm a believer that they do good and bad. You know, I'm a realist here. They've made some great things and they've made some bad things. But that's a situation where a 50-year-old company, or maybe even older, I don't know how old Dow is, but we know they're around for World War II. They were certainly going to have that, you know, defensive posture versus the people who are always coming in and trying to catch them on something. Whereas the new entrepreneurs are just going out there and within the existing legal structure, solving problems. You know, my San Diego professor, his business makes amino acids, and that's what they're turning into the new backbone of plastics, amino acids instead of oil. I don't know that that needs to be regulated. There are already regulations. He's not allowed to emit toxins. He's not allowed to pollute. And so I think those regulations are what we need. And we don't need a new regulation that says, if you're going to build an amino acid company, you need to go talk to Frank first, you know, and make sure you make Frank happy.
And there's a lot of government waste in a lot of the programs that were started. And so it is a thorny problem. I'm with you, though. I think entrepreneurs can help. And I think the awareness, if the politics can kind of dissipate a little bit, I think that's probably the best hope for us in the future. Well, we have to take a commercial break. We're with Jim Beach. Amazing discussion. He's the author of Real Environmentalist, and I suggest you pick up a copy and support the entrepreneurs who are supporting us. We'll be back right after this.
Do you hear that? That's the sound of uncertainty lurking under your hood. You know the feeling. I know I do. That sudden sinking sensation when you see a check engine light or your car unexpectedly breaks down and you're faced with sky-high repair bills. It's time to shield against unexpected repairs with CarShield. CarShield is America's most trusted auto protection company and has an A rating with the Better Business Bureau. Don't let the fear of a breakdown keep you up at night. Trust the Shield, CarShield, and say goodbye to terrifying repair bills and hello to peace of mind. Your plan also comes with 24/7 roadside assistance, courtesy towing, rental car options, and so much more. Don't wait till it's too late. Call CarShield now before a breakdown. Protect your wallet. Protect your car with CarShield. Get our best protection ever. Call now. You'll thank me later. 800-261-2176. 800-261-2176. That's 800-261-2176.
Have you outgrown your health insurance plan or just not happy with what you're paying for? The number one reason we all change our health insurance is price. Are you paying too much for your health insurance? Would you like to have better coverage at a better rate or at little or no cost to you? You're life needs are always changing, but have you done anything to improve your health insurance for you and your family? Health insurance laws and coverage are always changing and getting better. It's impossible to do all the research yourself, but now it's all done for you for free. So regardless of your age or medical condition, take a few minutes right now and find out if you can save money or even qualify for zero-cost health insurance in your state. Call now.
Paid for by Cheaper Health Insurance. 800-652-1470. 800-652-1470. 800-652-1470. That's 800-652-1470.
Now back to Passage to Profit. Once again, Richard and Elizabeth Gearhart.
And our special guest, Jim Beach, the real environmentalist.
Yeah. There's a lot of people out there working on this stuff.
Yes, he's also very much into entrepreneurship, and he has a school for that. And we're going to ask him some questions about his entrepreneurship school. I did go on your website and looked at it, and wow, you've done a lot, and you have a lot of credibility.
He's a five-time best-selling author.
Oh, he's done.
And he's been on like all the major networks.
So what does somebody need to do to get into your school of entrepreneurship? Can anybody join, or do you have a criteria that you follow?
We want everyone to join. I believe that everyone has the ability to be a successful entrepreneur and to change their life and to change the generations of their family. So we'll help anyone do it.
Where did you come up with the idea?
I was running a business in my 20s. I started the business when I was 23 and ran it until I was 31. We grew the largest summer camp company in the world. I started with one camp at Stanford and another one at MIT. And within 7 years, we were at 89 locations with 600 employees and taking care of some 20,000 kids a day. And when I got out of that business, sold that business to the cheerleading camp, by the way, the cheerleaders bought out the summer my summer camp business. They're the only ones bigger than us. I started reflecting on the things that we had done and the way we had done it. I started writing a book about that time. And also I was asked by Georgia State University to come and teach an international entrepreneurship class. And I went to that class and I was a little arrogant, a little cocky, 31 years old, just sold a big business, 600 employees. And I was, oh, this entrepreneurship stuff is so easy. Anyone can do it. It's so easy. And so my class made a bet. We bet that I could start a business that semester, make it cash flow positive that semester. They got to choose the country and the industry that I would start the business in. They chose Pakistan and furniture. So I had 3 months to build a profitable Pakistani furniture company. If you go on my LinkedIn profile and go to the experiences and scroll all the way to the bottom, you will see the chairs that we built, the product that we built. They are absolutely gorgeous, $3,000-$4,000 chairs. Well, I won the bet. And made the bet many semesters in a row, and a reporter from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution heard about that and said, what's the consistency? What are your, you know, the thing that makes this work? And I, by that point, I had developed my methodology. And the reporter said, well, you should write a book about this. And I said, well, I'll write a book if you find a publisher. I made him a bet. Well, a week later, he came back and said, McGraw-Hill has said yes. So you hear these stories about, I wrote a book and sent out 100 letters and got 99 rejections, and finally someone took it. No, and this really proves the, when we talk about entrepreneurs, you need to have your story really good. You need to know what your value statement is, your elevator pitch. Our elevator pitch was so good that McGraw-Hill said yes in 1 week to our book. We only pitched one person, McGraw-Hill, one-page proposal, we got a yes. And so we sat down to write School for Startups. I ended up writing it all. And it includes my three-pronged philosophy. Number one, creativity is worthless for an entrepreneur. You should just go copy, borrow, or steal someone's idea. 93% of businesses are copies of other existing businesses. So there's no reason to be in that 7% and try to come up with something new. Copy someone else's idea blatantly and just make it better. Of course, Richard, not going to steal any copyrights, trademarks, or patents.
Now you're talking to an intellectual property lawyer.
I know. So. My first business was American Computer Experience. It was a copy of National Computer Camp. National became American. Computer stayed the same. Camp became Experience. They started at Sunday at 3. Can you guess what time I started?
Sunday at 3?
But I didn't have their curriculum. I had to write my own curriculum, you know, all that. We just did it better. I was at Stanford. I don't know where they were, but I was at Stanford. Where do you want to send your kid for the summer? And so that was philosophy number one, copy someone else's idea and just make it better. Number two, risk. I don't believe in risk. I think you should start a business for under $5,000. If you can't prove the model for under five, you probably shouldn't do it. On my radio show, I have interviewed thousands of entrepreneurs who have bootstrapped every business model. And Richard Branson proved that you can bootstrap an airline with zero money. One of his favorite best stories. And wow. $5,000 is my limit to start a business. The same amount you would spend on your weekly vacation to, San Diego for the week, or, go to Vail something for the week. So that's the amount of risk I'm comfortable with. And number three, passion. Passion is awesome for the church, the synagogue, the mosque, and the bedroom. But nowhere else do you need to have passion. I sold a lot of stuff that I don't like, a lot of passion for items, or sold a lot of products that I just don't care for, because I'm more passionate about the money, the lifestyle, the freedom, the opportunity. I'm not obsessed with the thing. I will sell anything if it allows me to go on another week of vacation doing what I want to do. Yeah. So when you take those three rules, it changes the entire game. And so now I don't have to sit around waiting to discover what my passion is. I don't need to have a lightning bolt from God. I just need to read Entrepreneur Magazine, see what someone's doing in Denver, and do it better in Tacoma.
Right. Well, and I think that's the true definition of an entrepreneur. They don't have to invent it. They have to take a business from ground zero, build it, and then sell it. So I know some of them are lifestyle businesses, but a true entrepreneur just wants to develop a business and then sell and get an exit. And at Gearhart Law, we have entrepreneurs we've seen be successful time and time again, and they do protect their intellectual property. And then we have inventors who are people who really do want a lifestyle business. So they invented this and they want to build a business with it and keep it until they retire. And both ways work.
Yeah, I think what you say has a lot of truth in it. One of the things that we're working on right now are some of the software systems. And just by the nature of the way it came about, we have a few systems now that are patched together, and they're not necessarily legal systems or systems meant for attorneys or law firms. We're now looking at getting systems that are made especially for attorneys and law firms, because they've been through all the issues that we're trying to solve. So why buy something different and then try to make it work for you when somebody's already done that? And so your approach is really, very, very pragmatic. I think the creativity comes in from the decision making that you make and the directions that you take the company once it's started, your attention to trends, your sensitivity to customers. All of that is you. And that's, I think, something that would be very difficult for somebody to duplicate.
We're talking with Jim Beach on Passage to Profit. Jim, I had a question for you. Do you have a success story of somebody who's been through your entrepreneurial program and had a great exit?
Yes, we do. We're not really about the exit as much as just getting a business up and running. And most people end up loving doing that and keeping the business up and running. So yeah, we do. We've had a lot of web designers who have come through. We have one of my favorite success stories is Randy Brown, and he provides services for legal firms that have nothing to do with legal. So, stenographers and all of that kind of stuff, and the record keeping and the online things. And, he has a law firm supply company, I would say. So yeah, we've had thousands and thousands of people come through. We've been doing this since 2001.
That's great. Jim, it's been an amazing interview. We've learned so much and really appreciate your time. Can you tell our audience where they can find you?
Of course. They can go to jimbeach.com or schoolforstartupsradio.com or realenvironmentalist.com, all of those. But jimbeach.com is the easiest, and it launches off to everything.
Perfect. Well, thank you very much for joining us. Passage to Profit is a nationally syndicated radio show appearing on 40 stations across the U.S. In addition, Passage to Profit has also been recently selected by FeedSpot Podcasters database as a top 10 entrepreneur interview podcast. Thank you to the P2P team, our producer Noah Fleischman, and our program coordinator Alicia Morrissey, our studio assistant Rissaket Busari, and our social media powerhouse Carolina Tabares. Look for our podcast tomorrow anywhere you get your podcasts. Our podcast is ranked in the top 3% globally. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, X, and on our YouTube channel. And remember, while the information on this program is believed to be correct, never take a legal step without checking with your legal professional first. Gearhart Law is here for your patent, trademark, and copyright needs. You can find us at gearhartlaw.com and contact us for a free consultation. Take care, everybody. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.